Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Aparuta de sangamatasa tawara Yeso de wanta bamunjan tu satang. So this afternoon we have this opportunity to reflect on Dhamma the way it is. And so this word Dhamma is what's natural, what isn't created, doesn't arise and cease, isn't born, doesn't die. So this, it's completely natural. It's not what we think of nature in the West is the trees and the nature we see with our eyes. But that's all created. It has a birth and death, a beginning and end. The planet itself that we live on had a beginning, will have an end. So these are conditions in nature. But Dhamma then is natural. It isn't created, was never born, never dies. So reflect on this, this word Dhamma, nature, what's natural, what is unborn, what doesn't die. And of course these are words, explanations, definitions, concepts themselves. But what was never born and never dies, when you try to conceive of something, a thing that was never born and never dies, you can't. Even like when we use the word immortal, it was the mortal gods were born and they supposedly never die. So mortality is about death, something that is born and dies. But Dhamma is what is completely natural, uncreated, unborn. So how do we take refuge in that which we can't conceive of? We can't see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it. And so, what is it? And of course, the experience of here and now is Dhamma, conscious awareness. So you can align these two words, consciousness and Dhamma, because we think of consciousness in a very personal way, as my consciousness, or what I see, hear, smell, taste, touch. We think of, we're aligned with our senses, identified with the senses. And therefore we when we awaken, like the word Buddha means awakened one, when we're awake to Dhamma, it's this awakenedness that can realize Dhamma. So when we say realize Dhamma, we suddenly know for ourselves, this is it, consciousness is Dhamma, was never born, never dies, has no features, has no beginning or end. And this is like awakening. When we talk about Buddha, awakenness. So like Buddhas are like human beings that are awake to Dhamma, the way, the natural reality that we are, but we don't know it. So this not knowing of our true nature is called ignorance or avijja in the Pali words. Not knowing ultimate reality, we identify with what born and dies. And this is this identity with birth and death is one that always leaves us frightened, insecure, unstable, uncertain, because we bind ourselves to insecurity, to a physical body, to perceptions that we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, what we think. We align ourselves with what we're not, and that's why we experience suffering, or dukkha, the First Noble Truth. So the word Dhamma, to me, is a very powerful word because it's not an English word. It's an adopted word into English context. But we don't have anything comparable to it in the English language, except consciousness. So what is never born, never dies, has no beginning or end? You can't, you know, when you try to think about it, you just get caught in a trap, a whirlwind of thoughts and ideas, trying to define what is indefinable. But when you realize your true nature, that the consciousness that you're experiencing here and now is the ultimate simplicity. It's not something you have to find as an object. It's like trying to look for yourself, traveling around the world, trying to find yourself when you're always here and now. So consciousness is featureless, has no features. So it's not about male or female, or black or white, or nationality, or age, or any condition. So the conditions that arise in consciousness are called in Pali words dhammas. They're consciousness, but they're conditions that arise from consciousness. So it's oftentimes compared to waves on the sea. The waves are as much water as conscious as the sea is. But they always return to the sea. They have no stability. Waves depend on other conditions, on the wind, on the weather, on the season, and so forth. So they arise and cease according to conditions. So when we awaken to Dhamma, then we see everything as consciousness rather than giving such importance to the differences, the features that we experience through our senses. And if you notice that all the problems, personal problems, social problems, international problems, are all based on concepts, perceptions, what we see or what we think, things that are divisive. When you think of terms of male and female, then that's dividing human beings into two. It becomes increasingly complicated. Because these are conditions, they're not ultimately true or real, but they're what we tend to identify with until we awaken to the way it is. And in the Thai language, they actually use Dhamma as, you know, translate the word in a Thai context. If you translate it into English, it's nature, what's natural. And what is natural is not a ripple on the ocean or a tsunami, but the ocean itself, in which these tsunamis or ripples, waves arise, but they're all made out of consciousness. They're not like unconscious, but they have a beginning and end. They have features that we define and we give our attention to. But the stillness, the calm, the peace of consciousness itself can remain unnoticed for one lifetime, many lifetimes. So the forms, we have red, blue, and yellow, primary colors. We have green, orange, and purple, secondary colors. We have preferences. We like one color better than another color. We see yellow, we like it. We see red, we don't like it, or whatever. We have personal idiosyncratic reactions to the colors that we see. And we give great importance to what we think and feel. Is the right side of the political spectrum, is it wrong? If you're on the left side, you know, so if you see yourself as a lefty, then you see the right as a threat or wrong or not as good as, in a way that we compare the qualities of phenomena with our own personal preferences. Because we don't share, we can't expect everybody to have the same personal preferences as oneself. So in the teaching of the Buddha, he pointed to this ultimate reality. When we take refuge in Dhamma, it's not just ceremonial, kind of Theravada, Thai, Sri Lankan Buddhism that we're taking refuge in. Dhamma isn't about Thailand or Sri Lanka or India. It's a skillful word, and to take refuge in it is recommended, even as a ceremony. It's quite good not to look down on ceremonies, but ceremonies are conditions also. So we have in this tradition, the Theravada tradition, a lot of ceremonies and precepts, things that, conditions that we tend to attach to, like a lot of Buddhists attach to the ceremonial side. And that to them is what Buddha taught, was ceremonies. Or others can be just completely, we don't need ceremonies, we don't need Buddha images, we don't need all these precepts, just be mindful. But that's another opinion. Is it wrong or right? Which one is better? Attachment to ceremonies or just dismissing them is unimportant or unnecessary. Both are taking sides without you realizing what the ceremonies, what the teachings, what the words are actually pointing to. So intellectually we prefer one, the right or the left. But in terms of Dhamma, right and left don't exist anymore. They disappear because they're like soap bubbles on the sea, water bubbles or little ripples or waves, or they can be tsunamis. That they can destroy and influence our lives in very difficult, horrible ways when we give all our allegiance to a perspective that we hold as a person, as a separate person, as a one who is awakened to Dhamma. You have no opinions or views. There's no opinions or views in Dhamma. It's silent and still and peaceful. So peace . How can we expect to have peace through forms that are not basically peaceful forms, that are subject to change and influence, subject to personal preferences, prejudices, likes or dislikes? These conditions are, you know, what wars are about. Why husband and wives can't get along, or why there's racial discrimination or anti-Semitism. It's based on this preference and attachment to a position without we aren't realizing what we're doing. One of the biggest blocks and hindrances to awakening to Dhamma is feeling you're right. And so this feeling, I'm right, you're wrong, is very divisive. So when we have religions, we tend to be attached to kind of righteous views. So righteousness is taking a side, you know, when we believe our position is the right one, then anyone who doesn't align themselves with our belief is wrong. So there's a conflict that creates a conflict. In Vipassana meditation, where you're investigating experience, it's not about trying to prove you're right. about your opinion, your view, your perspective. It's not about trying to be right, but understanding how the view, I'm right, arises and ceases, or how we attach to a particular righteous view of what practice is about. So in Dhamma Vicaya, investigating Dhamma, it's how do we investigate something we can't see or perceive? You know, from being a person who's right. Or others, we have the other extreme of somebody who's very full of doubt, uncertainty, easily troubled, easily convinced, or skeptical. You know, if you hold to the position that I'm a doubter, I'm uncertain, I'm unstable, who is really wrong or unstable or weak? What is it? It's a thought in your mind you're holding to. So being absolutely positive and righteous about everything is one extreme, and feeling that you're never right, you don't know, you're troubled, there's something wrong with yourself, is another extreme. So in the Dhamma, when the Buddha pointed to dukkha as the first noble truth, or suffering, this was an invitation to investigate it, to understand suffering. It's not about being right about anything, but feeling right is like this. It's a feeling that we form with attachment out of ignorance. No matter how intelligently we can justify our righteous position, it's still a condition that we attach to, which inevitably leads to conflict. Or if we're a doubter, a skeptic, then when we identify with those words, perceive ourselves with those qualities, the Dhamma of it is to see that that's just an opinion of you, a condition that you are attached to. So don't, what you think is something that you can't believe is absolutely true. Thought arises and ceases according to conditions, to phenomena, to change. It's unstable, uncertain. So you're not what you think you are. So when we have conventional reality to deal with, like I'm a bhikkhu, I'm a Theravadin bhikkhu, that's a thought. And if I attach to that thought as my identity, when I realize it's merely a conventional identity, it's an adopted identity, it's not my true nature. It's not ultimate reality. So the forms that we use in this tradition are merely empty forms, but they're meant to help encourage us to investigate form, to see the emptiness of it ourselves through wisdom. Because when we let go of phenomena as our reality, we have this wisdom to understand that all conditions are impermanent. And Dhamma is not a personal quality. It's not self. All Dhammas, the Dhamma and the Dhammas, the changing conditions, are empty phenomena. So when you realize this, it's a realization. You might agree on the explanation, but the encouragement is to realize it for yourself. Because just being inspired by the teaching is the beginning. But inspiration is very impermanent. It's like sugar. It's very sweet, but it doesn't last very long. So when we depend on inspiration, then we bind ourselves to gurus, to teachers, to traditions, to views and opinions, out of ignorance. And so these things can't inspire us forever, so we become disillusioned with teachers, with gurus, with traditions. So when we expect to find to get permanent inspiration from a teacher or from a teaching, and then we lose that, we become bored or we begin to doubt, we hear rumors, we hear criticisms, and they affect us. They can destroy our inspired faith in some tradition or a teacher. But in terms of investigating Dhamma, that means when there's disillusion, doubt, disillusion is a condition also. It's not permanent and not self. So just part of our human experience, inspiration, disillusionment, happiness, then suffering, success and failure, praise and blame. They're about the world, the samsara, the changing realm. That we seek permanent inspiration, permanent happiness, permanent security in that which is very impermanent. So wisdom is clearly, presented in Pali terms as sape sankarani cha, all conditions are impermanent. So what does that mean? Is just reciting that all conditions are impermanent because the Buddha said so? How do you know all conditions are impermanent? Have you realized it for yourself? Have you really investigated conditions, phenomena, to know from insight, from wisdom, that conditions really are impermanent. Sapetamanata, all dhammas are anatta, not personal. Or dhamma, the dhamma itself is not a person. It's not personal. It's not mine or yours. So this way of investigating, you know, these are the tools for investigating. And I think that's why many of us are attracted to Buddhism, because it gives us tools to work with, not just to adopt a new religion or a different philosophy. That's not the point, because then we might be inspired by the Buddhism, by the Pali scriptures, and then we can become bored and disillusioned with them. We cling to them and memorize them and quote it and teach it and believe the words, but we haven't realized it for ourselves. So it's still very personal, you know, my faith in Buddha Dhamma. Everything is mine, my faith, my... when I, in the next life, I hope to be come back as a Buddhist. And I hear people talking like that, or they want to be reborn in a better realm than this one, the human realm. So you've got all these levels of kind of heavenly phenomena. But our devas, our brahmas, our gods, all these are concepts. As well as devils, hungry ghosts, Satan, evil forces. All these are perceptions we might cling to or dismiss, but we can feel that those who believe in Satanism are evil. But when we attach to those kind of concepts, wanting to harm and destroy, then we tend to act like that. When we attach to morality and goodness, virtuous action, right speech, right livelihood, then we tend to become like that, good. But it still can be seen in highly personal ways. Like the Devalokas, the part of the Theravada tradition, they're imaginary at this point for all of us. We imagine them or we dismiss them. We say, I haven't seen any Devadas, there aren't any. And others believe in them because they're part of the cosmology in this tradition. So you can believe or disbelieve. But believing, what is it like? Who actually believes anything? What is it in you that believes what you're told is right or wrong? When we reflect, then we're challenging just our, not that we're trying to destroy the evil forces. If we're good, well-intentioned, virtuous people, then we might want to destroy the devils, the evil forces. And that's a very righteous view. But it's also ignorant, because the evil forces are the opposite of the heavenly forces, and they're all in consciousness. So you as a good person trying to destroy the devils and the evil forces can become very caught up in good causes or fighting wars or destroying what you think are evil and wicked conditions. But it's never going to be fulfilling, because it's very destructive. And when you act destructively with your body, with your speech, then that tends to create a sense of conflict, of revenge, of increasing problems more than resolving them. So it's not a matter of destroying evil, but recognizing evil is a perception that arises and ceases. It has no heart, no essence. It's an empty soap bubble, a phenomena without a center. Same with sainthood, trying to become a saint, trying to be a perfect human being, is an empty phenomenon. So even with our best efforts, if we succeed in becoming a saint or a devil, the result is still empty phenomena. Rebirth, birth and death. Until we realize Dhamma, awaken to Dhamma, and that's our real refuge. That's what we trust. That's what we are. It's not like trusting it, because it's not an object. You can't trust an object. You try to trust objects or concepts or traditions. But when you really awaken to what you actually are in the present moment, here and now, then the suffering vanishes. There's no more right or wrong, good or bad, devas and devils. It's investigating this during my life as a bhikkhu. It's given me an opportunity to really put it to the test. Because I'm conditioned to believe. My cultural background is about belief. I've been told what to believe and what's right and what's wrong. And I remember as a samanera, 58, 59 years ago, it was like that all conditions are impermanent. I questioned that. I had to, maybe there's something that isn't impermanent. Then the belief side of me, the tendency to believe, well, it's in the suttas. The Buddha said everything's impermanent, so it must be impermanent, and to doubt that is wrong. But then the investigating abilities to, is the Buddha wrong? Or is he right? Is there something that is permanent? And then through just investigating phenomena as I experience it, through seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, and thinking, I began to realize that everything is impermanent. Everything I see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, all my emotions, my conditioning, my loves and hates, everything is impermanent. Except the awareness. I began to have insight into silence, which was, first I began to think of silence as impermanent. But then I began to realize silence is the background for all the noise and conflicts of the human heart, the human condition, the human mind. Behind the noise of your thinking mind and the noise that you hear through your ears, there's always this resonating silence. And then I realized this isn't a thing. It's not a thing that has a beginning or end. My attention to it, my ability to absorb into silence as a person didn't work. At first I thought I'll just use sound of silence as an object to concentrate on. But it's still like me, Sumedho, trying to get hold of silence in a permanent way. But I began to realize that behind all the noise and efforts that I make to get silent and peaceful permanently is this resonating silence. That's natural, it's not created. It's not a condition, it's not phenomenal. And so what can you do with silence but rest in it? Rather than trying to grasp it, that you can't grasp it. But learn to trust it, rest in it. So it's a matter of relaxed awareness rather than an intense effort to hold on to a thing, to a condition. Because if silence was a condition, then you could hold on to it. So silence is peaceful. Noise can be totally unpleasant or beautiful, but it always begins and ends. So Dhamma is not a thing that is impermanent. It's so when everything, all conditions are impermanent, sape sankaranicca, that is true. All conditions are impermanent. And then what is it in us that can recognize the beginning and ending of a thought or a condition? Can one condition be aware of another condition? Is it me that's aware of impermanence, my personal ability to recognize impermanence? Because I'm not believing in impermanence anymore. I'm just realizing impermanence is like this. It's silent, peaceful. And so the importance of the phenomenal conditions that arise lose their power. Suddenly they're no longer important to you. You no longer need to take sides or prove you're right or prove somebody else is wrong. And so that's the Nirodha, the end of suffering, Third Noble Truth. Suffering is impermanent. So I offer this as a reflection.